Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Let's talk about the actual perpetrator in today's case, Brittany. Brittany Dwyer, in fact, is her name. She was born on the 30th of June, 1997. So she's a young woman. Let's be clear about this. If you're born in 1997, you have the whole of your life to lead. You have everything ahead of you. You are basically at the very beginning of your life. She was born in South Australia, gorgeous place in the world. And when her family talk about her as a child, they said she was genuinely a really happy and bubbly kid. She was very well loved. She was very well supported. She had a lovely sibling that she was very close to, and essentially she was very much held firm in the spirit of what we expect family to be like. She had a very loving mother, and to all intents and purposes, life boded really well for Brittany Dwyer. Now this changes when she starts secondary school, and let's be clear, most of us have had experiences at our secondary school or our high school which have not been positive. Even if you were a popular kid and everybody adored you, chances are you'll have had some crap times because school is a little bit like running the gauntlet when you get into your teenage years. It is, to some degree, troubling for a lot of children, and it is for her. She goes to secondary school. She is a real tomboy. That's how her mother describes her, as I was when I was at high school. I wanted to climb trees. I wanted to hang out and play pool in pubs as opposed to go to school. And certainly that meant that I personally struggled at times at my secondary school. Certainly I had friends and certainly I didn't experience bullying. But if you add that to the mix, when you're already going through a really challenging time, you're changing physically, particularly girls. When you go through those shifts and changes in your physiology and all of a sudden the body that you know betrays you, it changes shape, it changes the way that you feel about the body that you inhabit, and you're going through all of this in the full gaze of your peers, and that can be really isolating. Then add to that educational and academic attainment requirements, the pressures that come from that, the maybe feeling that the world that you know and knew has become completely foreign to you because all of a sudden there are these expectations that you don't feel ready for. These are all things that compound the issues that a lot of children experience at secondary school. And like I said, for her, that is compounded on top of this because she has no friends and she also is struggling because she's being isolated by her peers and she's being bullied by her peers. Now, just to caveat that, because it's awful for any child to find themselves isolated, to find themselves abandoned by their peers at such a pivotal time in their life. However, what we also have to consider is why those individual peers choose to exclude her. Now, on one level, we can say, well, that's because kids can be really cruel. It's because kids can be incredibly nasty and they can feel that it's an us versus them mentality and they like to pick on one person, so it means that the spotlight is off them. Of course, that plays out, that happens. Some of you will experience that without a doubt in school. But what we can also say is that children are pretty good at sniffing out difference. Now, that can be, as I said, to be cruel, but it could also be because they suspect something is off about a certain individual. And I think if we're really honest with ourselves, we can all reflect on our school experience and think about kids who stood out because there was just something a little bit unnerving about them. The way that they spoke, the way that they moved, the way that they engaged or didn't engage. There is something about their aura and presence that just puts us on the back foot, makes us question who they are potentially. And it could be that while she is abandoned and isolated by her peers and bullied by her peers, it's not necessarily because they just single her out for no reason. It could be that they sense there is something deeply antisocial about Brittany Dwyer. And I would say if that were the case, the noses on them were very, very effective, because there is something very antisocial about Brittany Dwyer. Now, eventually, unfortunately for Dwyer, she makes a friend, Shelby Holmes. And all of a sudden, she has a partner in crime, somebody to have fun with. And understandably, Dwyer's mum, Tonya, who's a very devoted, very loving parent, who wants the best for her daughter. And Tonya is, of course, really hopeful. You know, all of a sudden, her child, who's felt very isolated, very lonely, she's gone from being this thriving little girl, this bubbly child, to suddenly feeling like the world is against her. And now she has somebody who's a sidekick to hang around with, somebody who likes her. And her mum hopes that this is going to bring out a new side to her daughter. Unfortunately, though, Shelby, her friend, isn't what one would consider is a positive influence in her life. In fact, she's considered quite a negative influence in her life. She was a drug dependent from a very young age. And
buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
And this meant that Dwyer was actually introduced to a new range of opportunities that were not pro-social and were very negative for her psychologically and physiologically. So Dwyer and Shelby end up doing cocaine together, MD together, and they also have a near obsession with horror movies. Now again, caveat, lots of young people go through periods of taking recreational drugs. Some take quite hard drugs. They get very engaged with the darker side of life because they're getting to know who they are and figuring out who they are. And sometimes it can be really difficult to stand out and be visible. So you choose things that make you more visible, even though they can be seen quite negatively, such as when I was a goth, people like to go to graveyards and people like to watch horror movies and people like to put white makeup on the face and dye the hair really black. It's because you want the world to notice you even when you are unconscious of that reality. So you're not doing it because you purposely wish for people to see you, but just ultimately by the way you look, people do see you. And in a world where very often no one takes any notice of who you are, it can be quite alluring to stand out. So I'm not going to throw in this idea that just because somebody is loving horror movies, which let's be clear, I bet loads of you on this channel do. I absolutely love a good horror movie. It helps me rehearse psychologically what I would do in those situations. I like being frightened. I like being able to control my fear, and really good horror movies allow you to do that. That certainly doesn't mean that you're going to go and do something horrible in your life. But he's taking drugs, and we all know that when you're under 25 years of age, anything you put in your body can have a massive impact on your brain and on your development. So that certainly has the potential to create fractures in her foundation. And at the same time, she has a really close relationship with her friend now, because bear in mind, she's felt alone. So this is a relationship where the two of them are essentially bouncing off each other. They enjoy the same things, and that validates what they're doing together and also reinforces it. Another thing that is noted in the research is that apparently both of them had a disturbing interest in cemeteries and death. Again, you can look at this in two ways. There are a ton of young people who have a real interest in things like cemeteries, because you are going through a psychological shift and change in your mentality. You realize as you start to grow up that life is temporary. It's a pretty scary reality that you come to terms with, usually when you're around 6, 7 years of age, and you figure out that people don't come back. They die. And even if you have a faith, because your family are bringing you up in that faith-centric environment, you still feel like it's a very foreign experience to try to identify with. The idea that somebody that you love can just disappear forever in your lifetime. And that's how death can feel. And how you manage that as you grow into your teens, for some is to just deny it, avoid it. For others, it's to just submerge themselves in it, to figure out, well, this is going to happen to me. It's going to happen to people I love. So I'm going to spend time exploring it. And of course, for some, that can be extreme, going to cemeteries, looking at graves, figuring out what happens in the afterlife, if you've got an interest in that. So having an interest in death doesn't mean it's disturbing. It can actually mean that you're trying to come to terms with something that so many of us struggle to do. But appreciate from the outside looking in, if you're going to cemeteries and you're talking about death a lot, people can see that as a potential issue. And indeed, if you have an antisocial personality disorder, or you're developing in a way which is going to lead you towards psychopathy, then of course, on a reflective episode and level, you can say that is something that was a red flag. But it's really important to remember that lots of teens and lots of you may have had a real interest in death and dying and may still do. And you may love cemeteries and the stories of the people who ended up in those graves. And that doesn't mean that there is anything macabre or malevolent about you. Now, Dwyer also at this point is extending a social network to some degree. She meets Bernadette Burns and they kind of become friends on Facebook. They actually end up in what would be considered a romantic relationship. Apparently they bonded over their real mutual love of the TV show American Horror Story. I'm sure a lot of you know the iconic American Horror Story series. I personally find it a little bit too much. I'm not gonna lie. It's just a little bit too left field for me, but I understand that there is a real following and it tells stories in a particular type of way. And if you're into those kind of stories, then you are going to be captivated by the consistent narrative that is ever shifting and shaping and shocking those who watch. Now, Burns, who she meets on Facebook, is actually 2 years older than her. She also had a two-year-old daughter. Actually, she had lost custody of that two-year-old daughter because of her problems. She was a drug addict and she was actually addicted to meth, which is obviously something that's going to cause a huge amount of issues in her life physically, emotionally, socially, and of course, familially. You are not going to be an effective parent if you are addicted to meth. That will be your primary motivation in life, not your child. Now, at this point, Dwyer is only 18 years of age. So she is still a very young woman. She's at the very beginning of her life. She hasn't had a lot of life experience, but she ends up moving out of the family home and she moves in with Shelby. And this will have been exciting because it's an opportunity to spread your wings and have a little bit more freedom. And for the most part, that's something that each and every one of us have a rite of passage to do. But we do need to be able to articulate life effectively by that point if we're going to do it successfully, because you have to navigate things like bills. And apparently she isn't very effective at bringing in money, shall we say. So she lived at this point in Red Bank Plains. It's apparently 30 kilometres southwest of Brisbane. Brisbane's a gorgeous place in Australia. And she struggled. She became increasingly stressed just about the whole nature of adult life, because when you move out, it's that real awakening for many of us, because when you're living with your parents, ostensibly your parents will take care of you on a range of levels that you don't even notice. You will throw your clothes on the floor and the magic cleaning fairy will just come in at some point and take those and then return them, usually folded, sometimes even ironed. You may wake up in the morning and the magic fairy may make you a cup of coffee or tea, or even make you some delicious breakfast. And you got so used to this kind of reality that you don't conceive of the fact that it happens because somebody who loves you is going out of their way to make your life easier by actually making their life a little bit more challenging. And so when you move out, you're not thinking about any of that stuff. You're just thinking about that, hey, I get to be independent. I get to live my life. Nobody gets to tell me what to do. And you've got all these positive messages that are impacting on your mindset and desires and your options and choices that you're making because you believe that it's going to be so wonderful. And then you arrive at that place and space. And it might be nice having freedom, but it's not that nice having to pay bills. It's not that nice having to look after all of your own shopping, your cleaning, your washing. It's not so easy living with other people either who are not your family. Your family get used to you. You have your rows, you have your problems, but they love you. When you go and live with somebody who's separate to you, the stresses and strains and conflict is much bigger because you're getting to know each other in a different way. And it can often abandon that initial joy that you had about the idea when you come into the stark reality of how it is dealing with other human beings who are not related to you whilst also holding down all those responsibilities. And she didn't want to hold down a job. She really struggled with that, and that adds to the problems. And she's also using drugs. She's drinking very heavily and she's 18. So bear in mind the kind of weight on her body that that's going to have. This is not a place and position that anyone would wish to encounter at 18 because you are not somebody who physiologically is prepared for the kind of impact that that's going to have on the way that you feel about your world, the way that you respond within your world, and the impact that it's going to have on the long-term future because you're affecting yourself so negatively. But the thing is, even though she is drinking and taking drugs heavily, and that's really bad for her, she's quite enjoying it. And the idea of getting a job for her will mean that that impacts on her opportunity to be free, get up when she wants, drink when she wants, go to bed when she likes. She kind of enjoys the lifestyle, but doesn't want to have to fund that lifestyle. So it's just a vicious cycle that she isn't breaking free from. But she's creative. So Dwyer decides that as she wants this lifestyle to carry on, as she has planned for it to carry on, and she doesn't want to have to get a job to financially support her, she's come up with another plan. Another opportunity where she can continue with this lifestyle and won't actually have to get a job, which obviously means that she's going to need to come across a substantial amount of money. And that's where Robert Whitwell comes in. Robert Whitwell is her beloved grandfather. He's 81 years of age. He lives in Craigmore.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Adelaide, who was born in March 1935, he had had a very long and happy marriage to his wife, Joyce, but sadly, Joyce, as she got older, had developed dementia, and this had meant that they'd moved her to a care home. Because obviously, at 81 years of age, even though he's healthy, the reality is that caring for somebody full-time with dementia is very hard work, and certainly as you get elderly, it is going to be something you struggle with deeply. She loved her grandfather. According to everybody who knew her, she called him Papa. He was somebody that doted on her. He was somebody that took so many home videos because he just adored his family. He was proud. He was really smart. Apparently, he would always wear a suit, even to go to the local stores. He just had this way of being about him. He was a really neat, a really tidy, and really effective human being. Now, the neighbours of him, Paula and John Elworthy, described him literally as a perfect neighbour. They said he was a lovely man, he was a real gentleman, he was somebody who kept his home and garden meticulous. And Robert, who bear in mind is 81 years of age, he would actually take their bins out for them. So he is a good human being with a community spirit, and he's going strong at 81 years of age. And Paula and John in return, they'd help him out with his shopping. They said he just had this absolutely brilliant sense of humour, and he was just full of stories. He always had a story to tell. It's one of the things that blows my mind about society. In the UK, we have a lot of residential homes for the elderly, and I appreciate that everybody has a reason for placing their elderly relative in a care home. I do not believe that's best on the whole for individuals to arrive at, because I think it's a foreign environment with strangers who are caring for you, and sometimes the level of care falls very short. And often I think that's to do with the Western culture of the myth of youth being the area that we should concentrate on where success is concerned. Youth is beautiful. I look at young people these days, sorry to detract from this, but it's in context with what I'm talking about. But I look at youth today, the under 30s, for example, and I find each and every one of them just beautiful. I look at their skin, I look at their possibilities, and I look at how they underestimate themselves. And it blows my mind that so often these young people have no idea of their possibilities. But then I also look at the way that our culture amplifies youth and suggests that youth is where all the success is. And it's ludicrous, because when you're young, you're not meant to know stuff. You're meant to go on a journey to know stuff. You've got growth that's going to be part of your development, and that's the beauty. And yet somehow in Western centric society, by the age of 35, life's over. Just get ready for the graveyard. And instead we should be focusing on what makes human beings really interesting and intoxicating. And that's the curiosity that we have over the years to learn. So when I look at the elderly, and I see so few of them being asked questions that could really enhance our lives, because often we forget about them. They become less and less visible, and yet they're more and more knowledgeable. And it disturbs me to imagine that there were these individuals with those stories, as has just been described, where Robert is concerned, and people aren't hearing them. And we just need to listen more to the elderly, because they are so full of knowledge and advice and guidance, and they have an amazing calm that they can share with us, because they have lived and we are still on that journey of living to some degree. And that means that the advice they can impart to us can just be so uniquely helpful to each and every one of us. I digress, but you know why I'm digressing in that moment. This is what Robert is like. He's got that amazing capacity to just tell stories. One of the things that's really notable about him is he was really extremely security conscious. He was deeply distrusting, not of people around him, but of just the world in general. He had some ideas about who he should trust and who he shouldn't trust. And he'd actually recently increased the height of his front fence because he'd actually found two strange men in his garden. It was about 2 months before his death, so he imagined that they might have been scoping the property out. And he didn't lay on his laurels. He just decided, I'm going to do something about this. I'm going to make myself feel more secure in my environment. So he'd gone ahead and made it more secure. And he was also concerned about a strange car that he'd seen in the area. So he was just making sure that he felt more confident in his home environment. And he also had some real trust issues in financial institutions. Now, I know a lot of you will be nodding your head and thinking, listen, in the last 5-10 years, I myself have started to think, is my money safe in banks? But unless you have a lot of savings, and I'm not one of those people who does, you're not too concerned about it. But if you are a person of means, then you do concern yourself with these things, because let's think about the 2008-2009 financial crash in the Western world. It wiped people's savings out. People went under overnight because the organisations they trusted to place their savings in literally dissolved. So a lot of people struggle to believe that they can trust the organisations that we once would have just accepted were going to verbatim be able to protect our finances. And he's certainly one of the people who has taken the idea of looking after his own money into his own hands in a very physical and practical way. So he literally kept all of his life savings in a locked shed in his garden. Sharp intake of breath, because at the end of the day, I would not sleep. I would not sleep. The only way I would sleep, if I had my $100,000, that's a fantasy of mine, obviously, because I don't have that, but if I had it locked in my garden shed. What if the garden shed were designed like something that you would see out of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom? If you haven't seen that because you're young, there's just a scene where, let's just say, it's hard to get in and you might die when you go and try and retrieve something from it. The only way is if that shed was actually a myriad of corridors with very threatening things occurring to you if you didn't have certain passcodes. The idea of putting $100,000 anywhere in my home would mean I was literally in a cold sweat 23 out of 24 hours a day. I'd only sleep for 1 hour a day because I'd be so nervous. But this is what he wants to do. And he doesn't advertise that. he does tell his daughter, Tonya, he says, you know, I've got my savings here. And she is a bit blindsided by it. She doesn't want him to do that. She's afraid that a drug dealer could find out about it and he could come and get raided. His response is, well, I don't need to worry about that because I'm not telling people. I'm not advertising that my money's in there. Now, bear in mind, Dwyer was present when he confided in his daughter that he had the money there. And we all know, what is Dwyer's primary motivation right now? She wants money, but she does not want to have to work for it. So knowing that her own papa, her own beloved grandfather, has got this money stashed away in his house, she starts to think about how she can get her hands on it. Now, the motivation behind that could be that in her mindset, she feels that that money is not necessary to him. He's 81 years of age. What's going to happen if he goes? Is he really going to have a change in lifestyle? It's just stored there. And that gives her this permission-based psychology to go ahead and do what she wishes to do, which is to take it from him. And that's a really antisocial mindset, isn't it? When we think about psychopaths, we think about individuals who are willing to exploit anybody around them, including people that the men love, as long as it gets them what they require. In this case, it gets her from A, I don't want to work, but I still want to entertain my life with drugs and drink and chilling with my mates, to B, achieving that without any hard work perfectly. And so this is really alluring for her. Now, she doesn't want to do it by herself. So she ends up speaking to her roommate, Shelby, and she confides in her that what she wants to do is to scope out Robert's house and ideally take some money in the end. So in April 2016, this is just a month after he's turned 81, that's what they go and do. Now, when they're there, it doesn't go to plan. Essentially, they struggle getting around the house and scoping out, and Robert ends up seeing Shelby, and she actually smiles at him and he smiles at her and says hello. And Shelby then texts Dwyer and says that she's met her granddad, and she even says, OMG, he is lovely. Dwyer texts back straight away, he is very lovely, don't get attached to him, he might have to die. Now again, that text is very telling, because you do not expect that somebody would agree that this person is indeed very lovely, but then to add to that, but don't get attached because we're probably going to have to kill him. Because that's the mindset behind that text. So to hold both of those beliefs in equal measure, he's lovely, but let's kill him, that's a level of cognitive dissonance that is very aware. The disassociation there is enormous, because essentially she's able to say, yes, my grandfather is lovely, but equally not lovely enough to wish to have alive, because at the end of the day, he's worth more dead to me. That is so callous, so cold, so disturbing. Now we get to May 2016, and at this point, Dwyer and Shelby actually do attempt to rob Robert. This is when he's out of the house. They get a milk crate, they climb over the fence, and they actually try to get into the house, but they're scared off because essentially they set off the motion lights and the neighbor's dog begins barking. So understandably, they feel that they're going to draw attention to themselves. So they abandon that plan in that moment. And it seems that that plan was specifically to try to get their hands on the money. But because that attempt fails, it almost feels like that seals Robert's fate, because she wants that cash. And the only way that she feels she's going to be able to get that cash is to be able to get into Robert's home, her grandfather's home, with his permission. Because by doing that, he's not going to be prepared for any attack. He just thinks that she loves him. She's going to visit him. And essentially, he would willingly open his door to his much beloved granddaughter. And it's also worth noting at this point, Shelby's got cold feet. She's scoped the place out before. She's gone with Dwyer to actually try to steal from him. But at this point, she's starting to feel that things are getting more sinister and she doesn't want to be involved in that. So she decides that she's out. She's not going to carry on down this route of trying to get Robert's money. But of course, Dwyer has set her mind on what's going to play out, and she decides, well, that's okay. Shelby's out, but I've got somebody else that I can recruit. And she gets Burns involved. So on the 5th of August 2016, Dwyer and Burns travel nearly 2,000 kilometres from the Gold Coast to Robert's house in Craigmore, Adelaide. That's a hell of a journey. And that's a long time to change your mind. I always think that when I cover cases, and those cases have involved a lot of travel for the perpetrator, because you have an opportunity to rethink, to recalibrate, to reframe, to change what you are doing, why you are doing it. You have time to think about changing that course of action. And if you don't, well, that says something really cold about you. Burns and Dwyer have decided at this point they're going to get Robert's money by any means necessary. When they arrive at Robert's house, Burns waits in the car. Apparently, at that point, she applied makeup, and Dwyer goes by herself into the house at 11 a.m. She's actually wearing gloves at this point. She's concealing a knife, so she's highly prepared. This is very premeditated. Now, of course, when Robert sees her, he's happy. His granddaughter's arrived. So she pretends at this moment in time that it's just a normal visit. She goes inside. She sits down on the couch. They end up looking through old family photos. So she sat with her grandfather looking at historical photographs of the family together. Again, think about her mindset in that moment. She has an opportunity to reconsider. This man who loves her, dotes on her, has cared for her, has been a part of her whole life, is sat reminiscing with her over these family photographs, and all the while.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
All she's thinking about is the cold, hard cash and how to get what she wants. Now, apparently, because this was happening at that point, she decides, I'm not going to go through with the murder. Momentarily, she thinks to herself, no, I can't do this. So she texts Burns and she says, I've changed my mind. Burns replies, just harden up and do it. 5 to 10 minutes after that text, Dwyer tells Robert that she has to leave. Robert accepts that. He walks his granddaughter to the front door because he's going to say goodbye to her. And then out of the blue, as far as he's concerned, she pulls out the knife that she'd brought with her, that she premeditated and planned to bring so she could use it as a weapon against her grandfather. And then she brings it up and stabs him in the neck. The neck. Each and every one of us knows. If you stab somebody in the neck, it's because you are going for a fatal blow. He turns around, shocked. At this moment, he puts his hands on her shoulders. He can't understand what's happening. And then she stabs him again in the chest and in the neck. And Robert, who will have absolutely no way of computing what is playing out, he will understand he's injured. He will understand who has injured him. But the concept of why, it will be so foreign that indeed he asks her that question, why? But Dwyer doesn't respond. He then walked into the kitchen. He grabs some bandages for his wounds. Dwyer at that point helps him. She even puts a plaster on one of his neck wounds. Dwyer then begins washing the dishes as Robert sits down in a chair and dies. It's so hard to imagine that scene. This man who even in his moment of being gravely injured, doesn't reach for the phone to call an ambulance or the police. He just goes about his business trying to stem the wounds and then just sits down and dies. Probably in those final moments, just asking in his head a million times, why? Like it's some kind of bad dream that this can't be happening. His beloved granddaughter couldn't possibly have stolen his life and breath from him in his own home. And yet that's exactly what's happened. At that point, she texts Burns, who's waiting outside, saying, "It's done." They then together ransack the house because obviously they're looking for the money. They end up taking $1,000 from Robert's wallet, some coins. They took a couple of digital cameras. They did fail to actually find the $100,000 that they believed was there. And then just about an hour after the two have carried out this heinous deed, Burns posts on Facebook, "The story of my life. I knew better, but I did it anyway." That's very telling, isn't it? She's saying that she understood that what she was doing was wrong, but she was compelled to do it anyway because she wanted to meet her own needs over anybody else's. We get to 11:30 a.m. This is on the 8th of August, 2016. And Robert's neighbour, John Elworthy, who's very close to him, along with another neighbour of his, Brian, they unfortunately find his body in his home. So they have the horrendous task of realising that something dreadful has befallen him and they have to see what has played out. The trauma they must have experienced will have been enormous. The reason that they'd actually gone in to check on him was because they were really concerned because they noticed an unread newspaper had remained in his driveway and that was completely atypical for him. So they actually went around to check like good neighbours do and their worst fears were absolutely confirmed. Now, at this point, the police have the very unenviable task of going and informing Tonya Dwyer, Robert's daughter, to say something bad has happened to your father. She said the police turned up at my house at 10 o'clock one night. They didn't know if it was a suicide or an accidental death or if somebody had done it to him. So at this point, her world has just collapsed. So she does what the vast majority of us would do in that moment. She calls people that she loves. So she rings her family members. She rings Dwyer. Bear in mind, at this point, Dwyer is still driving home from Adelaide because she has murdered him. And she gets this phone call off her mother, who is deeply distraught because she's saying, "Your grandfather has died." And apparently in that moment, Dwyer literally burst into tears on the phone. Now, there are different ways of looking at this. The most obvious one is that Dwyer is a stone cold psychopath and she realizes that is to be expected of her. Therefore, she overplays it by being highly distressed to try to convince her mother that she is indeed grieving. But it is also possible that she is sad. It is possible that somebody can choose their needs over another human being and to do it in the most deplorable and despicable way and to still feel a level of regret that you've had to do that, meaning that you actually can appear sad and indeed feel to some degree sad that you have gone ahead and carried out the most brutal crime to benefit yourself financially. So it isn't completely out of context that she could be crying because she has a level of feeling in that moment. Because she can love him to a degree, not as you or I would love, but in her mind love, and also make choices that benefit her over that apparent love that she feels. So like I said, it could be that she's a brutal stone cold psychopath per se, or it could be that there is just a tinge of feeling because of the past, because of those feelings that she's had as a child towards him, and that that is what she uses to then break down. And it's at this point that her mother says, understandably, "Listen, you need to come here, you need to be with the family," and that's indeed what Dwyer does. She drives straight there to meet her now incredibly distraught family. And Tonya, her mother said, she turned up looking like she hadn't had a shower for a week, like she hadn't brushed her teeth for a week, that she hadn't brushed her hair for a week. But at that point, I just didn't put two and two together. I was just in a state of shock. Of course, that makes perfect sense. And also, if somebody turns up looking a real mess and a real state when they've just found out that someone they adore has died, well, it's contextual. It's amazing how news can completely dishevel somebody. The horror of what you've heard is enough to just knock you off your feet. And you're probably not thinking about doing your makeup and hair. You just want to get to the people that you love. So like I said, it would not be left field for somebody to turn up looking a mess. Now, Dwyer, Tonya, and Dwyer's brother, Ryan, who was very close to her, they actually end up boarding the first flight to Adelaide, which means that Dwyer is going back straight to the crime scene that she has created. And boy, did she play a part. For 3 weeks, she just acted like the grieving granddaughter, and everybody in her family was entirely convinced. She actually celebrated her brother's birthday during those weeks, and he said, when you look at the pictures of us, there was just nothing untoward. It was like she was fully there with us. And for that family, looking at who she is in reality versus what they believed she was in reality is so far away from their original opinion that it's hard to imagine that she is the human being that they grew up with and that they nurtured, because she is so distinct from their viewpoints on her. But for 3 weeks, she plays that role. She's openly crying over the death of her grandfather. It's as if she has convinced herself that she really is entitled to those feelings, and she's disassociated from actually what she did, which was to brutalize and murder and watch the man who loved her bleed to death in front of her very eyes before ransacking his house and actually stealing from him. So she's able to compartmentalize essentially the murder to play this role and to play it very convincingly. And if somebody can do that, what does it say about their very nature? When you think about a true psychopath, the reason that they can appear to all intents and purposes normal, the reason that they can seem like a chameleon, is because their conscience just isn't pricked when they do nasty things. The reason that they can do something so deplorable and then go and hang out with you and have fun is because there is no feedback that's telling them what they have done is inappropriate. They know that they're not meant to. They know that there is a world around them with laws and rules, but they don't feel that they have to abide by them. And when they break them, it doesn't bother them. And that's exactly what's playing out here. Now, at the time of the murder, bear in mind, Burns was living with Dwyer, along with two other friends, Jody Greaves and Jamie Dennis. Now, Greaves ends up making a statement to the police, and they make that statement for very good reason. They say that after Dwyer and Burns had returned from their trip, Dwyer had basically told them a story that her uncle had died in Perth following a home invasion, so just made up a completely separate story to what had actually happened. And one of her housemates, Jamie, actually commented that that was a bit random because it just seemed a little bit left field. They weren't expecting that kind of conversation. Now, at this point, Burns approached Jody, one of the people that they were living with, and said, "Can I tell you something? But you can't tell anyone other than Jamie." So their household was allowed to know, but nobody else. And this is when she basically confided in her that Dwyer's trip to Adelaide was actually for the purpose of robbing her granddad. And Burns had apparently said that before they set off on that trip, Dwyer had made a joke that she was going to kill her granddad, but Burns said that she hadn't actually thought that she was being serious at first. And she also confided in the girl that she lived with that when Dwyer had told her that she couldn't go through with the murder, she'd actually had a go at Dwyer because she spent all of that money and fuel to get them to go to Adelaide, and she felt that she wasn't going to get remunerated for it because she couldn't go through with what she had planned. She also confided in her housemate that she'd been sat in the car outside Robert's house whilst Dwyer was inside, and Dwyer had been texting her and discussing the fact that she'd changed her mind for about 20 minutes and that she was annoyed about this. Also, she confided that Dwyer at this point had had breakfast with her grandfather and then had killed him. Now, bear in mind, Jody, who's the housemate, at this point is just blindsided. She doesn't actually believe it, so she asks Burns again, "Are you joking?" And Burns apparently burst into tears and started crying uncontrollably, and Jody realised clearly she's telling the truth. And so this is why the police are informed that something so hideously untoward had happened. Now, understandably, at this point, the police act, and both Dwyer and Burns were arrested on the 26th of August 2016. Now, the police actually said that the reason for the arrests were because of an anonymous tip, but I think we can all kind of assume, we can't be 100% sure, but let's just assume it was Jody. So at this point, they were charged with the murder of Robert Whitworth. They were held in Adelaide Women's Prison. Now, one of the things that we have to give to both of the defendants is that Dwyer and Burns pleaded guilty to murder. So they avoided a jury trial, they acknowledged responsibility, they took accountability to some degree at least by admitting that. And also I think it's really imperative that when somebody is caught for a crime that they did, when they acknowledge that they're guilty, what we know is the family are not going to be put through the horrendous trial that they would have had to experience had they chosen to go not guilty. Equally, we can be a little bit more cold around our assumption here and say, well, maybe they just realise that they'll get a much lesser sentence compared to if they say they're not guilty and then are found guilty, which they would be, because clearly they've had somebody who has given an anonymous tip. They have a lot of incriminating information about these two because they've taken their phones and they've got their digital footprint. So they are going to really struggle to get away with murder, even though initially they had absolutely attempted to. And who's to say that if that anonymous tip hadn't come in, they would have been in the line of fire? It could be that they maybe would have got away with murder if the police had not been directed their way. Now, when it came down to the sentencing, Justice Kevin Nicholson was the judge in this case. The prosecution was Jim Pierce. Dwyer's defence was ran by Craig Caldicott. And Burns' defence was led by Anthony Allen. That trial took place in November 2017. And both Dwyer and Burns were indeed tried together.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Now, when it came down to the prosecution's case, well, they had the digital footprint and they had the text messages. So the text that was sent between Burns and Dwyer before Robert was actually murdered, they're shown to the judge and very incriminating. Burns actually berated Dwyer for not wanting to go through with it because they'd gone all that way and that she'd spent all that money. So that's very incriminating on Burns' part. And then we have Dwyer's confession, because when she had the police interrogation, she did initially deny any involvement, but eventually she did confess to her role in the murder. And she also gave the police a hell of a lot of details about the events leading up to and also following the actual murder. So bang to rights on every single level is absolutely correct to state in this case. And also that means that Burns is absolutely implicated because Dwyer has come through and stated exactly what happened. So we always know that they're going to get a stern sentence in this case, but before the sentencing happens, the victim impact statements occurred. And I have such a sense of empathy and sympathy for Dwyer's family. You have to imagine this loving, connected family just being shattered because they have been living with a wolf in sheep's clothing. Okay, Dwyer had her issues. She hadn't had the best adolescence. She had some problems with drugs. But to all intents and purposes, she was a loved and valuable member of this family. They cared for her deeply. And yet all the while, she had the capacity to kill. Imagine knowing you've shared a home, a life, memories, love with somebody who all the while could have chosen to kill you if there was some benefit for them. That's the psychological prospect they have of having to come to terms with for the rest of their lives. Unlike some families, because listen, there are families out there who can go through trauma and go through a loss and see a family member who they truly adore and absolutely believe in, who does the most heinous, terrible things to another person they love. And they are able to not necessarily forgive them for what they did, but they can accept their actions without denying the relationship entirely. And they can move forward having a relationship with the person who's in prison in spite of what they did to the person that they loved. Some people have the potential to do that. I can see both sides, but I also have great respect for families who just go, no, this person is not somebody that we truly knew. This person is capable of the most malevolent and dark things that we could not even begin to accept in our world. And therefore we cannot be in a relationship with this person. And they've very much gone down this route. So Dwyer's brother, Ryan, he actually called for his sister and her accomplice to receive the maximum penalty. He said, my grandfather, Robert Whitwell, was a proud and giving man, always went above and beyond for anyone in need. The upset and anguish that you have both cast upon the Whitwell and the Dwyer families is unforgivable. There were countless moments you could have come clean, but instead you chose to betray me, your own brother. And then Dwyer's mother, Tonya, said, I feel like I'm drowning in life, which I feel is such a powerful statement. I get it. Do you get it? The drowning, the suffocating, that everything is just falling apart. All that I knew is no longer real. She's lost her father. She's lost her child. She is ultimately amputated of these powerfully important relationships. She has to live with that. Robert's brother, Jeffrey Whitwell, he also prepared a statement. He recounted actually embracing Dwyer as he said she wept fake tears for her papa. He said, I know now that I have been embracing and comforting my brother's killer. You're a master of deception. I will give you that. I will never forgive you. You're a cruel, deceitful person with no regard for human life. I believe you are dangerous and evil. Justice Kevin Nicholson, he said that the victim impact statements were extremely moving. He also said it is not possible to adequately summarize the distress and profound anguish. Now, the defense case actually had a psychiatrist report. Those reports indicated that she had BPD, which is borderline personality disorder, and also antisocial traits. And they stated that this, along with her history of drug addiction, contributed to her actions. When we have individuals with BPD as clients, we know that one of the things with people with BPD is that often it's related to history of trauma. So we have a complete empathy for why individuals develop BPD. And I would express that in a simple form as people with BPD sometimes struggle to regulate their emotions because life wasn't safe at some point. So they couldn't feel a foundation of security, and therefore they never knew how to create a stable vocabulary of emotion. But it doesn't make you a killer. But the antisocial traits, that could, without a shadow of a doubt. And with BPD, she's more likely to get involved with behaviors that are reckless, such as drug use. So that will certainly contribute to particular actions if she is inebriated, for example, that wouldn't be in line with who she was normally if she was sober. But again, the antisocial traits, I think, here are more to do with the psychopathy or the development of becoming a psychopath. And certainly when we look at her actions, that would be in line with absolutely what she did. The fact that she was under the influence during a very important period of development, of course, that's going to impact on her brain. But very many people have strong reliance on drugs and dependency on drugs. They don't end up killing people. They still have a conscience and a morality. That's something that she's clearly devoid of. And another thing that I would say is unforgivable is that Dwyer tells the psychiatrist during the evaluation that she had been molested by her grandfather. Yeah, apparently, now she's been arrested for his murder, now she's brutally murdered him in the most horrendous of way for financial gain, she's suddenly remembered that she's got flashbacks and that she'd actually gone to see her granddad that day with the intention of confronting him about the sexual abuse. Sorry, just run that through again. Yeah, so I went to my grandfather's house specifically to challenge him on the child molestation that he affected me with. Sorry, you literally have texts between you and the girl who you went with literally saying that you're going to get the money from him. It's got nothing to do with it. Yes, I know that's the case as it stands digitally. But what I'm saying is that I've got these flashbacks, and these flashbacks very much give me an excuse for killing him. So I'm just saying that in this session, conveniently with you, the psychiatrist who's writing some kind of report for my defense, I'm just saying that even though there's no record of it anywhere, and even though I've never talked about it anywhere before, suddenly I realized why I went there. And it was absolutely nothing to do with money. It was purely to do with the fact that he's an abuser, even though you've got no evidence of what that is at all. And there is no messages between anybody in the history of my life suggesting that what I've said is true. But what I'm saying is that is true now. And you should believe me, because I might be a brutalizing murderer of the highest level who kills people for financial gain. But apart from that, you know, I'm just somebody you should feel sorry for. Honestly, there is nothing worse than somebody who lies about this kind of situation, because first of all, it has the potential to slur the reputation of the individual who has been murdered, an innocent man who cared deeply about his granddaughter. It also makes a mockery of true victims because it's using it as an excuse as opposed to recognizing just how traumatized true victims are. And it's trying to leverage emotion to mean that she gets a lesser sentence. And of course, ain't gonna wash with the judge, is it? It ain't gonna wash with the prosecution either. And indeed, they reject that theory immediately. The prosecutor was very upset with this slur on Robert's character and said, "This accusation was the most unpleasant assertion. It's unfounded in any other material." So he told the court, apparently at 1 minute to midnight, Dwyer was having flashbacks about something her victim may or may not have done, despite not raising this as a motive at any other point in the investigation. So very convenient, shall we say, that all of a sudden she's bringing in this idea that she was molested. Now, the police conducted over 5 interviews with Dwyer, and guess what? During each and every one of them, didn't mention being molested by a grandfather once. Now, if that's going to be your defense, you are going to be screaming like a canary the moment you get an option to do so, because you're going to be saying, "I know what I did was terrible, but there is a reason, a driving force behind my actions." The prosecution said, "In my submission, the court would be entitled to infer, with the absence of evidence from Ms. Dwyer about this, that it is just simply an invention designed to give her an explanation for why she acted as she did." The prosecution also said the only other explanation is a premeditated, pre-planned, almost sociopathic killing. The prosecution also said it's insidious to a man who was murdered in that way. The prisoner just leaves it hanging. And that man is not here to defend himself. And that's true. They're saying this prisoner, this person defending in this moment, is basically casting this aspersion, and a very grave one. And the man who's murdered and brutalized in such a manner doesn't even get to speak about whether that's true or otherwise. And I think we can agree it's not true. She's using that as a last ditch attempt to explain her actions. Now, of course, when it comes down to Burns's prosecution, it's a bit more complex. Now, Burns' defence basically hinged on the fact that while she was indeed complicit on the plan to rob Robert, she didn't intend for him to be harmed. Now, I would question that in the fact there's a text basically having a go at Dwyer because she didn't want to go through with it, and she very much pushes the idea of going through with what their plan is. Now, bear in mind, it is true to say she wasn't in the building when he was murdered. She absolutely did not commit the murder herself. She did not, apparently, according to the defence, have the intention to kill or even to do grievous bodily harm to him. Again, I'm struggling with that because of those texts, but this is what the defence are saying. Her solicitor, Anthony Allen, said she feels great shame and sorrow for what she did. She knows what she has done is unforgivable. Also told the...
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
That Burns had a 4-year-old daughter and is apparently not an Australian citizen, so that means she would be deported upon her release from custody. That must happen in Australia. In the UK, we have a pile of sexual groomers of children who have spent millions of pounds somehow staying in the UK after they have been released from prison, and we've allowed them to stay, even in the area where kids who were horribly groomed by them, who are now adults, have to bump in to those not rights. So Australia, good on you if you go through with deporting these people who should not be in your country. We need to do the same in the UK. Now, the judge actually said during the verdict, you failed to see or accept the enormity and abhorrent wrongfulness of what you were planning. One remains at a loss to explain how a young woman of 19, notwithstanding your difficult background, although I have come across much worse, could do what you did. Your unnatural interest in violence and seeing people die and greed for money are contributing factors. This murder was brutal, calloused, cold-blooded and dispassionately planned. He said also he was not confident that Dwyer had the emotional makeup or capacity to be truly contrite. So he doesn't believe that she's somebody who's probably going to be safe walking the streets in the future. Now, both Dwyer and Burns during sentencing were handed life sentences. Now, they've got different parole periods. So for Dwyer, the judge stated that a non-parole period of 29 years was an appropriate starting point. They did allow a discount for Dwyer's guilty plea, cooperation with the police because she admitted it, and also the fact that she's young. So he reduced that minimum period to 20 years, but added 6 months for the aggravated serious criminal trespass. When that sentence was passed, Dwyer didn't show any emotion because she is basically a rock. Judge Nicholson also said that he believed she posed a danger to the public and her eventual release on parole wouldn't be guaranteed unless she could absolutely show significant progress of rehabilitation. Now, when it came down to Burns, they said that although Burns did not have murderous intent, she had serious criminal intent and knew it was a possibility that violence would be used against an 81-year-old man. So they began with a non-parole period of 20 years. They allowed discounts for her guilty pleas and circumstances, and they reduced that to life with a minimum of 13 and a half years. So she's likely going to be released and likely going to have a life on the outside. Some of you may think that's a good thing. Some of you may indeed think that's a bad thing. Some of you may feel that she's had a more stern sentence than she deserved. Some of you may feel she's absolutely deserving. She was texting Dwyer, encouraging her to go through with the violence. Now, the family made a statement outside the court. Jeffrey Whitwell actually spoke to the media, surrounded by family members, and said, "It's been a difficult time. We support one another. We're just there for one another as a family, and we just have to know now and be glad that it's all over and that we can get closure and let the healing begin and just move on. You couldn't get a better brother. He was truly a great gentleman. I don't think he ever had an argument with anybody ever in his life. He always helped everybody whenever he could, and he always tried to do the right thing. I think the presiding judge did an excellent job. I believe it's a fair sentence for the crime that's being committed." Tonya Dwyer, Dwyer's mother, she said that she was still furious with her daughter for making accusations that Robert sexually abused her. She said, "I was furious, and that's the reason why I would still slap her in the face. All that anger is inside." Now, remember Shelby Holmes, right at the beginning, the girl who actually didn't go through with the violence and backed off? She was a really close friend of Dwyer. She was actually charged with trespassing on Robert's property when she and Dwyer first attempted to rob him. She was actually jailed for 17 months with a minimum of 9 months. She actually received a suspended sentence. She only therefore spent 1 week in prison. I think Robert's relatives are very conflicted by that. They feel that she should have got a sterner sentence. With respect, however, to Shelby, I also think it's important to note that when things got real, she backed off, and I genuinely feel that she didn't believe that Dwyer had the capacity to go through with harm towards her grandfather. I think that she believed it was a bit of a game. They were always texting each other really inappropriate things. They liked blood and guts. They were obsessed with watching horror movies, etc. There was a darkness about their nature and exploration in that moment in time. But for Shelby, it wasn't real. Whereas for Dwyer, it entirely was. So they should be treated entirely differently. And she has also taken part in documentaries to try to explain herself. I would say that she isn't emotionally very able to express in a way that the mass majority of us would like to see her express. But it's very intimidating sitting, being interviewed, and having to say sorry when you know that something really tragic happened and your apology genuinely means nothing. It's not going to bring that person back. I'm not trying to be really sympathetic or empathetic to her. I'm just noting there is a very distinct difference between Shelby and indeed Burns and Dwyer. But again, you may feel differently. You may think that she got a very lenient sentence and 1 week in prison was certainly not enough. Let me know your thoughts as ever in the comments below. But like I said, the very beginning of this, isn't it terrifying? You can love someone, you can live with someone, you can feel connected to people, and they have this shadow within themselves that is so secret and that festers so greatly that at some point it just erupts and destroys the very fabric of everything you thought was your foundation. The Dwyers of this world are rare, but when they wreak their havoc, the ripple effect is everlasting. Robert lost his life in the most shocking of ways when you know that he was dying in that abject confusion. She may get to live a future free. And that's something that I think her family are going to really struggle with. Because could you ever truly feel safe knowing that an individual related to you has that capacity to kill? And maybe one day, the knock on your door will lead also to your demise, just as it led to Robert's. That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.